All right. Good morning. Our next case is Farmers Mill and Elevator Inc. versus Round Bank. The file number is A20-1432. As all parties are aware, this matter is being recorded in an audio manner, but our rules specifically prohibit anyone from recording it privately or for themselves. So do that. As all parties, I'm sure, are also aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever counsel for the appellant is ready, just tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, and you may begin, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Tyler Brimmer with the Fafinski, Mark & Johnson Law Firm, and I represent the appellant, Farmers Mill and Elevator, Inc. This matter is before your honors on an appeal from a grant of summary judgment in favor of respondent. The standard review is de novo, and there are three primary issues that we ask the court to consider today. The first two of the issues are kind of the substantive ones, and they relate to whether or not the respondent complied with Minnesota Statute 514-964, and specifically Subdivision 3, D and 3F. The last issue relates to prejudge and interest in the event that the court reverses and remands as we have requested, what the proper amount would be upon remand. And if it pleases the court, I'd like to spend most of my time on the first two points today because I think they're sort of the meatier of the two. This matter comes before the court as a dispute between two lenders, essentially. My client is a lender that provides crop inputs loans. So basically it loans farmers money so they can go buy the things they need to do to grow their crops. And Round Bank has a prior lien on the same crops as part of, I believe, a mortgage. And what this case comes down to is what the legislature intended and what they required when they passed 514-964 Subdivision 3. What that statute requires and what it's about really is a priority shifting provision. It's who gets paid when the crops finally get sold. And it gives crop input suppliers the ability to jump the line, so to speak, if they comply with the requirements of the statute. I note for the record before we get into this much further that the district court ruled as a matter of law that the lien was valid. There were objections made to that at the district court level, which were rejected, and that ruling is not appealed. So for purposes of your analysis, this lien is valid. And that matters, I think, when we get into the substance of the letter, which is probably what this case is mostly about.
Counsel, before we get into that, I just want to make clear, this was cross motions for summary judgment. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're not asking for a trial on the issue of whether the letter was a refusal, written refusal to issue a letter of commitment. You're saying as a matter of law, it was not.
Correct.
Okay. So when I look at a written refusal to issue a letter of commitment, okay, so that's what we're getting into, right? They responded within, the bank responded within 10 days. You're saying it was neither a letter of commitment nor a refusal of a letter of commitment, right? And you're saying that there's some third option that's out there. And it was something other than that. So it wasn't one of those two things. And you're saying because of that, your client takes priority in the lien, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So a letter of commitment, as I understand the way the statute works, if a lender, if the bank issues, what's the exact words, responds with a letter of commitment, then at that point, in fact, the supplier doesn't even get a lien, right? That it's financed and they're good, right?
Yep, they get paid, correct, yep.
Okay, so a letter of commitment, and I know this isn't exactly in a record, but I would expect that the seed supplier, or whatever, excuse me, the input supplier, would, getting something back from a bank would tell them like specific terms of the commitment that the bank is in fact committing to finance this. And it doesn't look like the letter back to the supplier said, we're committed to financing this. Don't worry, you're off the hook. So why is the district court wrong in saying, you know, there is no third thing. You either commit to financing it as a bank or you refuse to, and in which case the priorities continue as in the statute.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the dispositive issue here, to be sure. So I think maybe we start by looking at the letter itself and what it did. That's That's one way. That's how I approached it when I looked at this record for the first time. It says two things, their letter. First, it says, we reject your lien claim. And then it says, we assert rights to the collateral and the proceeds thereof. And if it's okay with you, I'll just split them into two. What they were doing when they said we reject the lien claim, at first I looked at it and I really wasn't sure what they meant. It definitely doesn't say we're going to issue you a letter of commitment. And it also definitely doesn't say we're not going to issue you a letter of commitment. This particular response is absolutely silent on the use of the word letter of commitment, on the terms of any letter of commitment, or whether or not the bank was interested, at least explicitly, in issuing credit. But what it does is it says we reject your lien claim. And to find the answer of what that meant, I actually had looked at the record of the district court and the district court's order. And what Round Bank argued below was that this lien was invalid for two reasons. It says it's invalid because you included interest in your lien statement, and it's invalid because your lawyer sent it to us instead of you sending it to us. The district court rejected both of those arguments, and they aren't appealed. So as a matter of law, those arguments were flawed.
Well, hold on.
I would argue.
Wait a minute. Why does it matter? I mean, what the rationale for the letter is doesn't seem to be in play if we're trying to interpret what the letter says at the point in which the letter was written. It says that Round Bank received your claim to a lien, where Round Bank is rejecting your claim to a lien. And if Round Bank is rejecting the claim to a lien, what other inference can be drawn other than the bank is refusing to issue any commitment to make a loan?
Well, I think first it's worth noting that Round Bank doesn't have the power to reject or accept a lien. It's filed with the appropriate state authority. So I don't think they have a legal authority to do that. But maybe this gets to the sort of the second part of their sentence, which says it asserts rights to collateral and proceeds thereof. I would argue that that actually creates ambiguity into what their response is, because the options are, if the bank were to issue a letter of commitment and provide financing, then its claim, its lien would maintain priority, because it would extinguish this competing lien. If the bank explicitly refuses to issue a letter of commitment under the statute, then its rights remain priority also. But what the statute provides is that if the bank fails to do either, then it's going to lose its lien rights. So just by commanding that we're not going to assert its rights. I'm sorry.
Pause you for a minute. How else would one read the Round Bank rejects the lien claim after having referred to the claimed lien in the first part of the prior sentence? Isn't it clear that the bank is stating that the basis for the lien, the claim of a lien, as stated in your client's delivery of notice that was provided, that there's no basis for it in the law, that 514-964 simply doesn't apply if your client doesn't have a valid lien?
I would note first that the district court said they were wrong about that. But
whether they're wrong about it or not doesn't really, I mean, that's not the point, is it? The point is, what are they intending to communicate, not whether or not they're right?
I think the relevant inquiry is what the statute requires. And the statute doesn't simply permit any response to be made. And it says when a bank is presented with a lien notification statement, it doesn't require the primary lender to either accept or reject that lien statement. It requires the bank to make the affirmative act of clearly indicating whether or not it's going to issue a letter of commitment. And our position is that that's not what they did here.
You put things into the statute when you say it explicitly or clearly, you have to do this or that. There is certainly an explicit and clear requirement on the party asserting the crop production input lien. There's a requirement as to what you put on the envelope. There's a requirement on how the envelope's delivered. There's a specific requirement as to what the specific information is. But for some reason, the legislature decided not to include any such clarity when it comes to what constitutes a written refusal. It just simply says it has to provide a written refusal. So the specific requirement, it has to be in writing, that's clear. but it doesn't say whether the refusal is either explicit or implicit. It doesn't say whether there's certain language that has to be used or whether the term letter of commitment has to be included at all in the language of the response. So push me back if I'm wrong on any of those things, but it seems to me as I read the statute that that's the way it goes.
I would say that the term letter of commitment is not one that's a mystery to anybody in the banking business. And I don't think it was one that had a great deal of ambiguity when the legislature put it into the statute.
Well, you know, I don't think the word no has got a great deal of mystery in the banking business either. So I'd like to follow up on Judge Ross's question and Judge Smith's question. What if the letter said this, dear whomever, I received your lien notification, period. No, yours truly, Matthias Greger. Would that satisfy the statute?
No, it wouldn't, because it wouldn't be a correct pronouncement.
You don't think that's an indication of where they're coming from?
Well, the lien notification statement doesn't pose a question in and of itself. So I think
they'd have to say, I've received it. No, we are not going to issue a letter of commitment, period. And that would do it.
Absolutely. All they had to say was, we refuse to issue a letter of commitment, then they would have complied. But they went in a different route, is our position.
What if they said, we refuse a letter? Just that. No, we refuse a letter. Is that enough?
I don't think so. I think that they have to make a pronouncement as to whether or not they're going to issue a letter of commitment. I think that's what the legislature required.
Just to be clear, I gather what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying that when the legislature says that a written refusal to issue a letter of commitment has to be made as an alternative, that communication has to be express and not implied. You can't merely imply the refusal to issue a letter of commitment. You have to expressly say so.
Yes.
So given the fact that the legislature, just four lines above it, provides a laundry list of things that have to be included when the legislature wants expressions of particularity, why would we assume that the legislature intends the letter to be so expressly communicated with specific language here when it shows a different means of communicating the obligation?
I mean, if you're referring to subdivisions 3C, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, is that the list you're referring to, Your Honor?
Well, I'm referring to subdivision 3B and C, which are both very clear and express and detailed. And then you go to D, and you have these, what I would say is looser language.
I would argue that subpart C that has the five bullet points has a number of terms, none of which are defined or put in quotes or bolded.
No, but name and address is pretty specific. There is name and address of specific individuals, you don't have to put name and address in quotation marks. If you see a name and an address, that's very specific. And you have what's on the letter. The envelope has to be marked with express language in quotation marks. Seems to me if your argument would carry more weight if the first part of that, if provision B was equally sort of loose, but it's very precise. It tells me the legislature is able to communicate when it expects precise and, in your terms, express language to be used.
I would also point the court to 3C, which includes the terms retail costs or anticipated costs, which were terms that weren't clearly defined, that was litigated below. Maybe that speaks to the written refusal. But my other response is the legislature did include the term letter of commitment.
Well, let me ask you this, counsel. What if instead a bank responded and said, we are delighted to finance this. We will pay exactly the amount you just told us. It'll be at X amount of interest. Go ahead, sell it. We agree we're on the hook for it. Have they quote, responded with a letter of commitment under D1?
I believe that they would have.
Even though they've never used the term letter of commitment by outlining the terms of the deal. So
I would argue yes, because okay. I'm sorry. I apologize for the Zoom delay. I would argue that it at least gets to the substance of what a letter of commitment is. If it says we will issue the loan at $330,000 at 14%, that is beyond argument to be a letter of commitment. I think the case law actually bears that out a little bit. I see I'm out of time. I'm happy to jump into the cases now or on my reply, but
Can I ask one quick question before
you? Yes, go ahead, Judge Ross.
What if the, I'll stick with Judge Smith's hypothetical, but add a caveat. Instead of saying we'll cover all of it, it just says we'll cover part of it. Doesn't say what part or how much. Does that satisfy the statute?
I think that it does, because then they're making a commitment.
What if they're only committing to $10 worth?
Then I think the statute is blind as to what amount. I think the way that the statute reads, this may not be great for a client like mine, but what the statute reads is if they've complied by issuing that letter of commitment,
they keep their priority. Okay, fair enough. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brimmer. We'll now hear for counsel for the bank.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Dove and I represent the respondent, Round Bank. It's been an interesting dialogue listening to the questions that have been out there, because I believe that the April 2nd, 2018 letter clearly and unequivocally meets the statutory requirements of 514.964.
I bet they could write a better letter in the future, because I don't think that the letter actually, I think it's, you know, it doesn't say we're not financing.
I imagine Mr. Dove has broached that question with the bank, and there'll be a different letter next time.
Yes, there will be, Your Honor.
Right. So it's not a question of whether, as opposing counsel said, there are two valid liens here. It's the priority question then, right?
That is correct. And
so to reject a lien claim, you know, what does that mean? So.
Correct. And I think, Your Honor, in the banking industry, the only reason that suppliers send this is when they have not been paid before. And if we look at the facts of this, these inputs were supplied or financed in 2017, about 11 to 9 months prior to the notice being given. And as a result of that, when that was sent there, they knew when they saw that dollar amount that Mr. Cohode had not paid the plaintiff for whatever charges it incurred in his 2017 farming operation. And as Judge Smith has acknowledged, now we're going to have a priority dispute, which is a lien. And I believe that is the basis for the resuscitation, that it rejects the lien.
Can I interrupt you for a moment? This is not my area of practice or expertise, and I would say the only things I planted would never constitute a cash crop in my life. So I want to get a sense of whether this is really a binary sort of response, whether it can be interpreted only as one or the other. And tell me and help me to understand whether the following sentence might reasonably have been added to the letter that was provided by Mr. Greger. After having said that Round Bank rejects the lien claim and asserts its rights to collateral and proceeds thereof, is there no universe in which the bank might then go on and say, in any event, we've examined the case and it is in the bank's best interest to extend to your client at this time a letter of commitment to cover all or part of the retail cost of the of the claim that you assert, or of the product that was provided to produce the crop. Is that entirely unreasonable or illogical? And if it's not, then explain why this letter would be sufficient to necessarily lead the recipient to conclude that the letter of commitment is being denied.
Whether or not it's logical or practical, Your Honor, I would say that and from my experience in doing this, that there's been one time in 20 plus years where somebody actually issued a letter of commitment to do this. In my experience, the ones I've seen, this is usually used as a stopgap measure once it's been determined and we have seen that, again, the borrower, Mr. Coho, did not pay for his previous input liens from another individual. That plaintiff knew and has admitted that the bank had a first lien on all the crops
I'm just trying to get a sense of whether it would be, is it entirely out of the question for a bank to say, you know what, we don't have to issue this commitment. You know, we're first, you know, we're not going to give any extra extended loan. But what if the bank were to look at the finances and say, you know, there's no risk here involved. We see the client, we know, we have a long-term relationship. And so, yeah, you know, we would extend credit in this case. And if I'm getting at is I'm trying to get a sense of whether what's in this language necessarily excludes the potential for the letter of commitment or commitment to extend a loan.
Your Honor, certainly is an option, yes. But the reason the letter excludes it is because we've been focusing on the words letter of commitment. I think we got to look at the words written refusal, okay? As the court, the district court held, I mean, this was a written refusal. What other interpretation could have been used when we say we reject the lien claim?
And right, but it's got to be a refusal of a specific thing. And the statute says it's got to be refusal of the letter of commitment. That's why I was trying to get a sense of whether it's plausible for both to exist in the same universe, both a statement saying, you know, we think your claim is hooey, but nevertheless, you know, we'd be willing to extend credit.
That, Your Honor, I don't believe would be plausible to say we challenge and reject your lien, but then we're still going to give you an issue a letter of commitment. And I think, you know, to further support the refusal is that first sentence about the lien notification statement. Obviously, this was returned within a day or two after they received it. And certainly Mr. Peterson, as attorney for the plaintiff, was aware of and certainly became aware, you know, knew that this was an action where the bank is rejecting it in a timely manner.
Well, I'm guessing to follow up on Judge Connolly's and Judge Smith's assumptions about what might have happened behind the scenes with perhaps you having a conversation with your client, I'm guessing it's not a coincidence that it took more than 10 days to respond. That there was I think it was on April 25th that the letter came back saying, defining this as something other than a refusal. I'm assuming that if the letter had been written on April 3rd, that your client might have then had an opportunity to be more specific in a way that satisfies the appellant in this case. But again, I'm reading between the lines.
And Your Honor, I think the reason why, and as has been noted and is cited in our brief, the express statutory language, I mean, as we noted and was decided by the Minnesota Court of Appeals in the Norman West Aarons case. I mean, the legislature can and does know how to identify and say this language needs to be included. It put in quotes and it put in capital letters, you know, important dash legal notice, which needs to be included on the envelope. And I think it's also important to note from the legislative history and their past actions, especially when it involves with agriculture. We've cited to a number of situations, for example, with where the legislature has said, okay, for a farmer lender mediation notice, this is what needs to be included. If you're gonna enforce a right under the UCC or cancel a contract for deed or seek to collect a judgment, you need to provide this specific notice. If you're gonna go into a foreclosure, you need to provide this specific notice. What the legislature has put out there, has identified and continually emphasizes with the quotes and the capitalized letter.
But- But can you address this? I mean, it is true that there's no quotation marks in the statute in this part of the provision as to what has to be included in a written refusal to issue a letter of commitment. But shouldn't there be some language? Doesn't the statute suggest that there has to be at least some language that references a letter of commitment or references a loan or an extension of credit or somehow covers the subject matter of what would be included in a letter of commitment in order to say that this paragraph two has been satisfied?
Your Honor, I think that goes back to one of Judge Smith's original questions, that this is a priority issue. Everybody knows that Round Bank has a lien on the property. This is an attempt by the plaintiff to go back in and supersede and juggle statutorily the priority rights that is given typically under the Uniform Commercial Code. So to say that you need to use the word commitment within the response, I don't think you need to do.
I'm not saying you need to use the word commitment, but given the fact that the statute says that you have to either issue a letter of commitment or you have to provide a written refusal to issue a letter of commitment, shouldn't there be something in the letter that, in the written response, that would indicate it's about the same subject matter as a letter of commitment, that it refers to a loan, it refers to credit, it doesn't have to use the word commitment, but shouldn't there be something that ties it back to the statute, even if it's not using any magic words?
Your Honor, I don't think there are any magic words, number one. Number two, I think the first sentence where Round Bank says that they received a lien notification statement, that within itself puts everybody on notice that the purpose of this letter is to address the 10-day requirement that's set forth in 514.964 subdivision 3. I think it could be a different case if that matter wasn't on there. We reject the claim. We don't know what claim you're talking about.
What if they got a lien notification statement and there was nothing wrong with them sending a lien notification statement? I mean, that's not an issue, right? To send it and try and gain priority right. And stuff like that. I mean, that's all okay. What if a bank responds? So I guess my question is the non-issuance of a letter of commitment necessarily a refusal? Okay, within 10 days. And I think that's sort of an underlying question here. What if the bank responded saying, got your lien notification statement? We'll make a decision down the road about whether we're going to issue a letter of commitment. Happens then?
Well, I think the acknowledgement of it within itself does not do anything, and they would have the 10-day response period to further clarify to either extend a letter or just refuse.
So if they don't extend it within 10 days, that's sort of what you're saying is the point of this scheme, is to let the supplier know within 10 days whether it's going to be financed and they're going to be covered. And if it doesn't happen, if it's put off or something like that, well then is that a refusal? I guess I'm just trying to figure out what that is.
Your Honor, under the statute, if you don't respond at all, so you acknowledge.
I'm assuming a response, but one that doesn't tell us, one that says, yeah, we're going to make a decision about this in 2 months.
Okay.
So they have told them within 10 days.
I don't think that's a response within the 10 days to either do one or the other.
So it's a response, but it's not a response that's either a refusal. There is sort of a third response, like response, oh, nice to hear from you, or we'll decide down the road or something like that, but they don't commit. You're saying that could be not a response under the statute.
Your Honor, I think the key word again is written refusal. You respond to say we'll issue a letter of commitment, we refuse. And if it's not one of those issues, then I think that from that standpoint, the 10 days runs.
They gain priority. The supplier gains priority.
Correct. Yeah. And the issue in this case in particular, Your Honor, is they had already extended the credit right? I mean, this isn't an anticipatory credit going forward. Do we make the decision now or not to extend the credit? This credit was extended the year before. And it's only after the harvest season had been done in April of 2018 that the plaintiff is now coming back and say, oh, by the way, now we want to get into a first lien position or try to get into a first lien position. You're hereby put on notice of our crop inputs, for the preceding year. So I think that's important to address. And again,
that's what the statute contemplates. There's nothing nefarious about attempting to step in front in the priority. That's exactly what the statute and legislature wants to allow.
I agree, Your Honor. I just wanted to make clear that this wasn't an anticipatory going forward. This is just looking in reverse from that standpoint. And I believe one of the judges asked, how does that impact? Well, the decision was already made to fund the crop is what I'm trying to say. It wasn't an anticipatory thing. If we get this, do we loan them the money or if we don't? So that's the
And you're suggesting, yeah, Counselor, you're suggesting then that those facts inform the meaning of this letter in order to determine whether it's a refusal.
Yes. In my last 37 seconds, the other issue that was addressed by the trial court was that the bank did send a copy of the letter to Mr. Cohode as is required by the statute. The statute does not have any specific statutory timelines or time frames within which to send that letter. And with that, I'll my last 17 seconds, if there's any more questions, I'll be more than happy.
Well, if you're right about that, then of course, a challenge based upon a failure to notify the party, the failure to actually send it to the farmer, the copy of the lender's response, you could wait until the day of trial.
Your Honor, I think you would have to do it within that 16-month period as far as when they provide you that written notice and then you respond one way or the other. I believe the intent of that notification to the actual producer is to say, on a go-forward basis, look, we're not going to subordinate our lien to plaintiff, and as a result of that, you might need to be looking for some additional financing. I think the primary intent of that is to advise the underlying person of what it is and the situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brimmer, you'll have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honors. Thank you, Counsel. In response to the issue on the notice requirement to the farmer, I think it's worth providing a little bit of context. I did it in the briefing, but I think that the legislature included that as a clear pronouncement that you have to tell the farmer what the mortgage holder's position is on the crop input. I think that it is unreasonable and unfair to the farmer to not put a timeline on it.
Well, pause for a minute. When you say, I'm sorry, you're referring to the notice to the farmer, not, okay. I thought you were making your argument based upon the first part of the notice. All right, sorry for interrupting.
Not at all, thank you, Your Honor. In practical sense, the way this works is the farmer owes the mortgage company for his land and the mortgage that they hold is also for the crops he's growing. And this particular farmer, the reason he did business with my client was because he needed more money to buy the seed and fertilizer and all those inputs. Where he stands with his crop input supplying lender is obviously a matter of great importance to him from a financial perspective and from a business going forward perspective, because I think it's safe to assume that if the bank's not going to cover this crop supply input and the crop supply lender, like they are in my case, is going to be left unsatisfied after the crops are sold, you know, his likelihood of being able to get more money from us is obviously greatly diminished. So I would say that the legislature was not perfectly clear in subdivision D. I think we have to acknowledge that. But when it's read as a whole, the bank is required to respond within 10 days. And I believe that the only reasonable interpretation of that requirement to notify the farmer is that it's either contemporaneous and in no event within outside the 10-day window. If you don't have a limit on it, then it keeps the farmer in the dark perpetually. And I think
We've been advised by the Supreme Court, and we have said in repeated opinions that It simply isn't the role of the judiciary to include language in a statute, even if we think that language was inadvertently omitted. And it seems as if the terms either within 10 days or immediately or contemporaneously are terms that you would have us read into that sentence. But I hope you understand the difficulty of that. I understand that you're saying, well, it's not much use otherwise in most circumstances. That may be so, but is that our role to fix that problem?
I can appreciate that, Your Honor. And I think that that's not a problem that necessarily needs fixing. I think it just takes a reasonable interpretation look at it. And in subparagraph D, the only time period that's prescribed is 10 calendar days. And it says, bank has to respond within 10 calendar days and has to provide a copy to the farmer. It does not explicitly say the farmer must also receive his copy within 10 days. But my argument would be that the only reasonable interpretation of that is that it's contemporaneous. If you send the letter back to a crop supplier, you copy or you send a copy in the mail if it's paper to the farmer. That just seems that seems like the only reasonable outcome. And I also think that as a court and as counsel looking at this, we have to avoid dangerous, unfair, absurd sort of outcomes. Always keeping the farmer in the dark. I struggle to think that that's what the legislature intended. I am happy to address the interest issue briefly. I know counsel didn't get a chance to talk about it, but in basic terms, our position is that we seek reversal of the district court's ruling on summary judgment and that instead judgment be entered in our favor. And we put forward that we're entitled to a reasonable amount of interest as provided in the statutes to what the ultimate judgment amount is, because we contend that Brown Bank has been holding on to funds that properly belong to us due to its non-compliance and that the statutes permit for the application and inclusion of additional interest. So
if we ruled in your favor on the two more substantive issues, why wouldn't this last issue be one for the district court to address rather than our court?
In practical terms, it may well be, because there's actually going to be an issue about, as of the date of judgment, what the total interest will have accrued, and that will require some finding. And it may well be appropriate for the specific amount of the judgment to be entered to be one for the trial court to determine, but on the substantive law issue of whether or not my client is entitled to interest, we believe that is one that this court can decide as a matter of law. I notice that my time is up, so if anybody else has questions from your honors, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, thank you all for your time today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brimmer. Thank you, Mr. Dove. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our decision in 90 days.